Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 16, entitled The Lord's Attempt to Go to Vrindavan. Text 242 to, I believe it's 264. It's a good amount of verses. So, Jai. Let's begin. Etakahi Mahaprabhu Tanre Vidya Dila Gare Asi Mahaprabhuda Shiksha Acharilam. I'll just go through this it's just so many. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bade farewell to Raghunath Das, who returned home and did exactly what the Lord told him. Text 243. After returning home, Raghunath Das gave up all craziness and external pseudo-renunciation and engaged in his household duties without attachment. Text 244. When Raghunath Das's father and mother saw that their son was acting like a householder, they became very happy. Because of this, they slackened their guard. Purport. When Raghunath Das's father and mother saw that their son was no longer acting like a crazy fellow and was responsibly attending to his duties, they became very happy. The 11 people, 5 watchmen, 4 personal servants, and 2 brahmanas who were guarding him became less strict in their vigilance. When Raghunath Das actually took up his household affairs, his parents reduced the number of guards. Texts 245 and 246. Meanwhile, at Shantipur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assembled all his devotees, headed by Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, embraced them all, and asked their permission to return to Jagannath Puri. Text 247. Because he had met them all at Shantipur, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested all the devotees not to go to Jagannath Puri that year. Text 248. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I shall certainly go to Vrindavan from Jagannath Puri. If all of you give me permission, I shall return here again without difficulty. Text 249. Clasping the feet of his mother, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very humbly requested her permission. Thus, she gave him leave to go to Vrindavan. Text 250. Srimati Shachidevi was sent back to Navadvipa, and the Lord and his devotees started for Jagannath Puri, Niladri. Text 251. The devotees who accompanied Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rendered all kinds of service on the way to Nilachala, Jagannath Puri. Thus, in great happiness, the Lord returned. Text 252. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived in Jagannath Puri, he visited the temple of the Lord. The news spread all over the city that he had returned. Text 253. All the devotees then came and met the Lord with great happiness. The Lord also embraced each of them with great ecstatic love. Text 254. Kashi Mishra, Ramananda Roy, Pradyumna, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Vaninath Rai, Sikhi Mahiti, and all the other devotees met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Text 255. Gadadhar Pandit also came and met the Lord. Then, before all the devotees, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to speak as follows. Text 256. It was my decision to go to Vrindavan through Bengal in order to see my mother and the river Ganges. Text 257. Thus, I went to Bengal, but thousands of devotees began to follow me. Text 258. Many hundreds and thousands of people came to see me out of curiosity, and due to such a large crowd, I could not travel very freely on the road. Text 259. Indeed, the crowd was so large that the house and the boundary walls of the house where I stayed were destroyed, and wherever I looked, I could see only large crowds. Text 260. With great difficulty, I went to the town of Ramakali, where I met two brothers named Rupa and Sanatan. Text 261. These two brothers are great devotees and suitable recipients of Krishna's mercy. But in their ordinary dealings, they are government officials, ministers to the king. Text 62. Srila Rupa and Sanatan are very experienced in education, devotional service, intelligence, and strength. Yet they think themselves inferior to straw in the street. Text 263 and 264, last ones. Indeed, the humility of these two brothers could even melt stone. Because I was very pleased with their behavior, I told them, although you are both very exalted, you consider yourselves inferior. And because of this, Krishna will very soon deliver you. Purport. Such are the qualifications of a pure devotee. Materially, one may be very opulent, experienced, influential, and educated. But if one still thinks himself lower than straw in the street, one attracts the attention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Lord Krishna. Although Maharaj Prataparudra was a king, he took up a broom to cleanse the road of Lord Jagannath's chariot. Because of this humble service, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with the king, and for that reason, the Lord embraced him. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction, a devotee should never be puffed up by material power. He should know that material power is a result of one's past good activities, karma, and is consequently transient. At this moment, all of one's material opulence can be finished. Therefore, a devotee is never proud of such opulence. He is always humble and meek, considering himself lower than a piece of straw. Because of this, the devotees are eligible to return home back to Godhead. Om Jnanati Virandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Mosute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Vipasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much, all of you, for having me here. Before I begin, I would like to request all of you to please bless me so that I may speak something which is in line with our Guru Parampara, which is purifying to our hearts, and that our hearts become fertile ground for the sublime message to take root on. So today we're hearing a little bit about the Lord's excursions. When the Lord wants to travel, you know, how he does it. This was the Lord's, second failed attempt to go to Vrindavan. When was the first one? No, sorry, this was like the third one? Yeah, this was the third. When was the first one? After he took sannyas. Well, that was the second one. The very first one was as soon as he got initiated. he became mad, and he was just like, okay, I'm going to Vrindavan. And he was going there by himself. But at that moment, there was a voice from the sky that told him, my lord, you can go afterwards, but you have to go back and start the Sankirtan mission. You know, that's your purpose, so please go back. So he went back. The second one was when he took sannyas. He went like, okay, I'm going to Vrindavan. And everybody went like, yeah, we're going to Vrindavan too. So he was going there, but because of Lord Nityananda, he was redirected to Shantipur. And you know, it's funny, you know, when he saw Advaitacharya in the Ganges, he said, Advaitacharya, what are you doing in Vrindavan? He said, welcome to Shantipur. So that was the second. And here was the third failed attempt. You know, he tried to go to Vrindavan. And as he was going, you know, so many people started coming like that. And he actually took a very, very big detour in his travels, because he went to Ramakeli, which is totally the opposite direction. But he wanted to do that specifically because he wanted to meet Rupa and Sanatan. And when he met Rupa and Sanatan there, he was asked by Sanatan to, you know, please go at a later time, because he was just seeing that, you know, this is such a big disturbance. You know, all of these people we were hearing today, how they were just destroying everything. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's such a big crowd, you know, of thousands of people, as it is explained here. How do you not, you know, it's like stampede. It's a stampede of, you know, of elephants. It's just like breaking everything like that. So he said that it's not the best thing to go to Vrindavan, Sanatan Goswami told him. Because one, when you go there, he said, Vrindavan is a place, you know, where you should just go with one or two people. Just very, very nice, you know. It's a very intimate place. And if you go there with all these people, one, the bridge bosses will all think that you're, you know, some puffed up person that is, you know, coming into their midst. And also, you know, it's just such a, it would be such a disturbance to your bhajan. To be in with so many people just like breaking trees and doing all kinds of things like that. So the Lord, you know, he thought about this, and at some point he said, okay, let me just go back. Yeah, because it is said that as the Lord was walking, people were just like, oh, you know, the dust from the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they would take a little bit of dust. And, you know, one person does it, and everybody else has to do it as well, right? So it is said that they were making, you know, huge craters, you know, potholes that are the biggest craters on the road to Vrindavan. So it was just like, oh my God, what is this? You know. So the Lord said, okay, you know, I think I'll go. What Sanatan Goswami told me was right. I should go at a later time. So he went back. And we're hearing here how he was greeted, you know, with so much love, you know, by the devotees. Because at that time, you know, the Lord goes to Vrindavan. Who knows if he'll come back? I mean, the Lord is so much in love with Krishna that if he goes to Vrindavan, who knows if he'll just like stay there forever, right? You know, the land of Krishna. So the devotees were, you know, they had attempted not to let him go there, you know, just by saying like, well, maybe after this, maybe after that, maybe. So he finally, he said, please let me go. He said, okay, fine. So now he comes back, everybody's super happy. And one of the highlights of his trip, he's now telling all the devotees there. What is that highlight? Rupa and Sanatan. He's talking about these very two exalted brothers, who is saying our very experience in education, devotional service, intelligent and strength, yet they think themselves inferior to straw in the street. Now, he could have said many things about the whole trip, you know, going there, but he is highlighting this, you know, that there are these two incredible brothers who have everything, and yet they're humble. Now, this is a very interesting thing, because in this world, it is almost impossible to find somebody that has so many opulences, you know, as these two have, and to the degree that they have, and not be affected by them. In fact, you know, these things are like intoxicants, right? When Kunti says, Janmashvarya Shruta Shribir Edamana Mada Puman Nevarhati Abhidatum Vai Vamakinchana Gocharam. My Lord, your Lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. Only one who's on the path of one who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So these opulences, they get to us. It's like you start a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, and then you don't know what happened. You don't know what happened, and you're suddenly like super intoxicated, and you don't know that. This is the great thing about these intoxications of beauty and knowledge and high parentage and wealth, and is that you have them, you become intoxicated, and you believe that other people are the ones who are intoxicated. This was the case with Indra. We recently had the Govardhan Puja, right? And what was it that Indra said to the Samvartaka clouds? You know, he said, these puffed up people down there at the Vrijavasis, thinking themselves so opulent, you know, are now intoxicated with pride. And because of that, they have stopped the Indra Puja. I will show them a lesson, just to relieve them of their pride. I'm going to destroy their town. Go, Sambhartak clouds, and destroy this town of Vrindavan, so that they learn and they can be relieved of their pride. Says the person who is proud. You know? He was thinking that these people, you know, were proud, but, and that is the nature. You become blind to your own pride like that. And it is very difficult to convince somebody that is not. But without humility, our chanting will not reach the hearts of Radha Shyama Sundar. That is the importance. The one thing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, really emphasized, like as a main teaching to us, is that without humility, we cannot have sincere chanting of the Lord's holy names. Trinadapi sunichana, tarorapi sahasuna, amanina manadina, kirtanya sadavahi. He emphasized that the principle of being the servant of the servant of the servant. And in fact, our Sampradaya is a beautiful line of sincere devotees who are aspiring to be the servants of the servants of the servant. We have as great exponents Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatana Goswamis. It is said that Mahaprabhu empowered devotees to exemplify to extreme degrees certain principles that he wanted, for people to notice. And Shri Rupa and Sri Sanatan, they were the emblems of humility. Just as Raghunath Das, who we also heard about today, he was also the emblem of renunciation. He said that if anybody tries to imitate Raghunath Das, he will surely die. And Ramananda Roy, he was also empowered by the Lord to show the extreme sense control. And it said that if anybody tries to do what he did, he will surely fall down. So Rupa and Sanatan, they are these great examples. But we also have, examples of humility like that, like in our sampradaya, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, he had so much learning. In Bengal, you know, he was considered, you know, one of the intellectuals. And everybody, you know, he would speak, you know, in these learned circles, you know, like that. And he was also a magistrate, very high post, high magistrate. Yet he was so humble. Kishordas Babaji, he had the opulence of renunciation. And yet he would go and listen from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Somebody who is so renounced, he would say, like, oh, just look at this person, you know, that's just like just enjoying, you know, as a householder. No. He would go and submissively listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then we have Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. You know, Singha Guru. Right? Yet at the end of his manifest Leela, he was pleading, you know, to his disciples, please forgive him for any offenses he might have done. It's like, wow. And then we have our own Srila Prabhupada, who in so many different ways showed us what humility really means. And he showed us that, you know, a person can be very strong for Srila Prabhupada and yet extremely humble at the same time. In today's purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking to us about also a very important person, which is Maharaj Pratapa-Rudra. Maharaj Pratapa-Rudra is saying that he was a king. And not only was he a king, you know, king means extreme opulence. You know, it's not just like that you have a little bit of money. It means extreme opulence. And not only that, but Maharaj Pratapa-Rudra, it is said that he was a very strong ruler. At this time in Bengal, remember that all the Muslim forces are trying to attack India, and they're trying to conquer places. And they're conquering the land very effectively, but they cannot go into Orissa because the king there is so powerful. Maharaj Pratapa-Rudra was a very powerful king, and he stood his ground. He did not let the Muslim invaders come. So this was not like, you know, one of those kings that we hear, you know, that just scratches his belly and, you know, just tries to enjoy his opulence and sends people out. No. Here's a king who is standing his ground, who goes out to fight, and, you know, is maintaining the his grounds. This king, he just asked for the audience of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, like, no, I'm not going to give him that. Because kings are very, you know, materialistic people. And a sannyasi can't be, you know, associated with these materialistic people. So the king was distraught. He was like, what? You know, how is it not? he sent his son so that you know, at least his son could get the embrace of Lord Mahaprabhu. And so when he embraced his son, he was like thinking like, oh, now I'm embracing the Lord. But that was not enough for him. You know, this was something that the devotee said, like, well, you know, because you can't approach the Lord directly, you send your son. So he said, okay, fine. And he tried to feel that, but he was like, I need more. You know, so the devotee said, you know, they were trying to help him, telling Lord Chaitanya, please come and the Lord became so upset with the devotees and said, if anybody else tries to tell me anything about Mahaprabhu, I will just leave. And everybody was like, okay, so we can't bring up the topic anymore. And so the king at that point, you know, he was like, wow. But not only that, imagine this. When Mahaprabhu went on his South Indian tour, he met with Ramananda Roy. And then Ramananda Roy comes back to the king and says, I want to resign from my post. Why is that? You know, you're an excellent person. I need you there. Why do you want to leave? He said, because Mahaprabhu met with me and he wants me to just drop everything and come and stay with him in Nilachala forever. Here is another government official. You know, just as materially opulent, you know, just as like, Lord Chaitanya would not do it for Maharaj Pratapa Rudra, but he would do it for him. And not only that, he said, just come with me. Right. Now at this point, envy could have really taken over and said like, you know what? No, you stay where you are, and if not, then I'll kill you. But no, he said like, please go. You know, not only are you relieved of this, you're so lucky. I will give you a raise and full pension for the rest of your life so that you can live comfortably and, you know, associate with Mahaprabhu. That is extreme. You know, somebody, something that you're just yearning for so long, and then somebody else gets it. And for no reason. You know, it's like you've been a good devotee. You know, you've chanted all your rounds. You've come to Mangalarti. You know? And the Lord doesn't want to see you, but he does want to see the other person. And not only that, but he's giving like super, super hyper special mercy to that person. You know, we as devotees, you know, sometimes we see the, you know, the spiritual master, you know, sometimes he gives us a special glance, you know, some special mercy, like, oh, like that. But if he doesn't, then we go like, well, why is that? And then he looks at somebody else. Somebody who, you know, in our eyes, sometimes it's like, well, he's not doing, you know, as much as I'm doing, or maybe he's not as strict as I am, and like that. But he gives special mercy to that devotee. It's like, why is that? The Lord is completely svarat. He's completely independent. And he can do as he wishes. And we have to understand that. That there, in terms of mercy, there is no reason. And we should be okay with that. Generally, we want mercy for ourselves and justice for others. But we should look at it the other way around. We should want justice for ourselves, and in that case, then there should be a lot of, you know, bad things coming to us because of all of the you know, incredible amounts of sins that we've committed previously. And mercy for others. At least that's how we should feel. that everybody should get the mercy. Because it is only by having this attitude of humility that the Lord will actually come to us and bestow His mercy upon us. I was asking a devotee in Vrindavan who stayed there for a very long time, you know, about, you know, who's qualified to stay in Vrindavan? You know, who are the people that stay there for a long time? Right? And he told me, it's impossible to tell. He said, you see some devotees that are like so fixed up, you know, devotees that are, you know, that they are constantly absorbed in Shastra, who are chanting, you know, so many rounds, who are coming to the morning program. Like, they're like incredible devotees, very humble, very meek, doing everything, you know, right. And after a few months, they say, I can't stay here anymore. I have to leave. And some other devotees that are, you know, less than what you would expect as a standard. And yet, they stay in Vrindavan for so many years. How is that possible? He said, you just see that, you know, it's the Lord's will. He, you know, somehow or other, he's seeing something, he has his will, and we have to be okay with that. Having that humility of just being able to agree that the Lord knows better, that He can see more, that there is a plan to whatever He is doing, and that whatever He's doing in our lives is perfect arrangement for us, including all those devotees who are so difficult to work with. You know? Including all of that is a perfect arrangement of the Lord for us to come back to Him as soon as possible. So, Srila Prabhupada here is sobering us up, telling us that any opulence that we may have is actually from good karma, and that it will be temporary. So we should see that, you know, if I have any good education, if I have any beauty, if I have any wealth or have parentage, it's all temporary. And not only that, but we should also see that even the things that I'm proud of, you know, because we become proud of anything. You know, we sing a little nice, and already, you know, we think that, you know, we should be in you know, all of these shows, you know, that on TV, you know, it's just because I sang today at Mangalarti, and today it sounded very nice, you know, I should be in one of these shows. You know, we make a little something nice, and everybody likes it, and it's, okay, well, no, I'm the next Kurma. I'm the next Yamuna. Right? We become proud so easily. So easily. But even our ability, you know, to be able to even chant our rounds, our ability to be able to wake up early in the morning, all these things are actually things that can be taken away from us at any time. I experienced this when I was living in Athens, Ohio, when I was doing my PhD. When I was with the devotees there, it was so easy for me to get up in the morning and chant my rounds and then go to school. But during the last year of my school there, suddenly all the devotees graduated on me. And then I had to just spend that last year by myself. just waking up early to chant my rounds was so difficult. What was previously so easy, you know, that I was suddenly it became like almost impossible. And it was only due to the mercy of one devotee, actually two devotees, that I was able to take this again. You know, one devotee was staying in Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and we would Skype every morning to sit down and chant together. And I would get up just to, because I knew that he was waiting for me. I would get up early in the morning because I knew that he was waiting for me to chant my rounds with him. And we developed such a beautiful friendship because of that. And I understood at that point that, you know, even what I thought was, you know, my ability to chant rounds and get up early in the morning, it's all due to the mercy of the Lord and the devotees. So we need this association of the devotees because they help us to be able to follow. And they also help us to see our blind spots. If we start getting a little too proud, the Lord will point it out to us through them in some way or other. And in this mood of humility, we'll actually be able to have this unity and diversity that Prabhupada wanted so much from us. This was something that Prabhupada, when he left the planet, he really emphasized, because this was what he was thinking, like, how will this movement go on, you know, like, and he asked us, you know, to cooperate with each other. This cooperation happens when we have humility. And right now, you know, at the Bhaktivedanta Institute for Higher Studies, we're coming together, many, many different devotee scientists coming together to try to understand the fifth canto and see how we can work together to do that. And there are so many different ideas and so many different approaches to the text that it's really, you know, bringing us to the point of, you know, you have to be humble. So we pray to all of you, you know, to please, you know, bless us and ask the Lord that we may be able to put aside our egos so that we can work together despite whatever different ideas that we have for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. I have to leave at, you know, in about 5 minutes, because otherwise we'll be late for our meeting there. So in the 5 minutes that remain, if there are any questions or comments or chastisements or even wisecracks, you know, this is the time. Yes, Ruth.
You said using others of prayer,
yes,
as an example. Mm-hmm. And in the what you read earlier, you talked about the humility that was capable, the humility possessed by these Goswamis that was so powerful that it could melt stone.
Yes.
It does seem as a phenomenon that those with a malady, they accuse others of the same malady. And those with humility or some advantage, opulence, they see that advantage in others. So I was thinking you could address this psychological phenomenon.
it's a very interesting phenomenon indeed. The person who is humble generally sees all, you know, all fault in himself. You know, what Bhaktisiddhanta said, that, you know, why is it that I see faults in others? Because I'm honeycombed with the faults of myself. That we are projecting generally on the world what we see within ourselves. So a person with a very pure heart, he will see everybody as pure hearted. while a person that is very proud will see others as very proud. It is this projection of us onto the world that makes it so. And because of that, we want to purify our hearts so that, you know, we can live in a world of beauty. And guess what? When we go, if we want to go back to the spiritual world, you know, we have to be called back. And we have to make it in such a way that all the bridge bosses there are just calling us back, telling us, please, come, come, we want you here. And who's going to give reference, you know, to them to bring us here? Well, the other devotees that are also going back there that we've known. All the devotees that are around us, they will also come back to the spiritual world with us at some point. And we have to see that, okay, I have to make good with them. You know, because they're not only will I be living with them also in the spiritual world, but they're the ones who will be, you know, calling me back and asking others to help me come back.
It's an exception. The spiritual master almost insists that the devotees, the advanced devotees,
I'm sorry, there's an exception, and that is that the spiritual master, with intent, leaves those who are very advanced to the material world for the benefit of the material world. They don't call them back. They leave them there. And so I was thinking of your example with Maharaj Prataparudi. He's very influential. And because he's influential and powerful, then he's denied the immediate, intimate association that Ramananda Roy had. Whereas Ramananda Roy's mood was advantageous to the ecstasies of Mahaprabhu. Whereas Maharaj Prataparudi's similar humility was more readily employed in the material world.
Yeah, and even if we come back, you know, if we were to come back here for that, we want to be in the association of devotees. Like, I think it was Tamalkrishna Maharaj that said that he wanted to, you know, if he was to come back, he wanted to come back, you know, to Srila Prabhupada. You know, to be part of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes in the different universes like that. I can't remember who I heard that from. But, you know. We want to always be in the association of devotees. We want to be called by the devotees. We want to be dear to the devotees. That's the main thing. Wherever we are called, you know, we want to be in that association of the devotees where we can constantly think of the Lord. Where we can always chant His glories and call out His holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. The Prabhupada key. Yeah.